You're listening to Neurodiversity at Work.
My homie told me that when people rise up against you, it's a sign of your destiny real. Fake ones been hating cause they know that one day you're making it. Jealousy's all they can feel. Plug in the phone, drift in my zone. Pain in the future when thinking alone. About when I'm grown, already blown. How'd I get blessed with this beautiful home? You were the sight, beautiful life. Beautiful sex, my husband and wife. Beautiful children, people who wanna come kill me.
Today's podcast is one I've been trying to record for some time. I'm joined by Lena and Sean from the BBC. They've been doing some incredible work online. You can access some of the content that they've been creating around neurodiversity. And it's really fantastic to see two people who've created something from the ground up. I hope you really enjoy this story. It's one I've been after for a while. So pleased I was able to record it. And we have two wonderful people in Lena and Sean telling their story. Enjoy. Hi, Theo here at Neurodiversity at Work. And today I have the pleasure of being joined by Sean and Lena from the BBC. I've been really impressed by some of the incredible work that they've been doing. And I've been sharing some of that work with the audience when I get a chance, when I meet with people and present to people. And I really wanted to get Sean and Lena on today to talk about some of the great work that they're doing. So Sean, Lena, would you like to introduce yourselves? Sean, if you'd like to take the lead, let us know who you are, what you do.
Hi, Theo. Thanks for having us on the podcast. Looking forward to having a chat. I'm a UX principal for cognitive design at the BBC, and I work in the user experience and design team in Salford in the Northwest. And I'm also one of the BBC's neurodiversity leads, working on the initiative BBC CAPE, which stands for Creating a Positive Environment.
Lovely. And Lena?
Hi, Theo. I'm Lena, and I work alongside Sean on the BBC CAPE's Neurodiversity Initiative. I'm also a user experience designer for BBC's user experience and design team. And we're also looking into cognitive design, as Sean mentioned.
Excellent. So I've got two things that I'm really interested in. Is you don't necessarily come from where we may expect initiatives like this. And I don't know where we expect, but sometimes, you know, they're led by HR or they're, you know, diversity teams. What does neurodiversity mean to both of you? And how have you come about being a part of this wonderful initiative at the BBC?
I'll let Lena start that conversation, seeing as it was Lena's initial chat with me that started this all off.
Wow. Okay. No pressure. So, when I first started at the BBC, I'll make a little disclosure before I start waffling. I'm on the autism spectrum, and I also have ADHD. So I class myself as neurodivergent. Basically, what this entails is, I guess, at the beginning, no one really knew much about neurodiversity. It's a relatively new concept at the time, especially when I first started at the BBC. And when I started talking to Sean about it, who is my line manager, you know, he wasn't familiar with it himself. So it was all about finding out about how my experiences of work were like, and in terms of my environment, we just started having a conversation, really. It all stemmed from there, about what it means to have a differently wired brain and how you find your environment, how you process information, how you communicate. You know, it's that sort of stuff that doesn't get highlighted as much. And also with neurodiversity, we wanted to, I guess, not just discuss that there are challenges in terms of accessing certain things within the workplace. We also wanted to share the fact that there's a pool of talent that is unfortunately not being tapped into. And we wanted to sort of highlight that neurodiversity was about the differences in differently wired brains in terms of, you know, we're trying to highlight the diversity of perspectives, talents, and the way of thinking, and the fact that this could potentially lead to original insights, solutions, innovation, and people contributing in creative ways. For me, I process, I'm a visual thinker. Pictures is my first language. So for me to just even verbalize what I'm thinking, it can be quite challenging. So I'm trying my best to verbalize things. And part of what we're trying to do is, that's okay. It's if you communicate in a different way, we're trying to say, well, that doesn't mean it's less. It's just another form of communication. It's just another way of relaying your thoughts, and there's nothing wrong with it.
What I love about this, and I think this is something that certainly other organisations and people within businesses, when they struggle with this as a concept, is knowing what to do. I find it fascinating when this is led by two individuals coming together, a manager trying to understand his colleague and then looking at what can be done, and not just what can be done for the individual, but actually how you can then take that out across the organization and beyond the organization, which is exactly what you've done.
I mean, it was a really interesting kind of time at the beginning there, talking to Lena and listening to her experiences, because I mean, I'd been at the BBC for probably around 8 years at the time, and it's the first time I'd met anybody who identified as autistic or explained this to me. And kind of mirroring Lena's perspective, when I was looking for information, training available, you know, it was something I'd heard of, but I didn't really understand. You know, certainly when it came to how do I support somebody? So it was that, you know, I couldn't find any information. Lena's experience was that people didn't really know much about it and weren't particularly aware or understood what support meant. So it was an opportunity for us, as a result of that conversation, to think about, well, how do we change that for other people? Because it can't just be us. This has got to be a wider issue across the organization. And we were also fortunate, it was very recently that we'd moved up to the Media City complex in the Northwest. It was, we had a really supportive finance director at the time, Ian Haythornthwaite, and we took this idea to him and said, look, we'd love to do a little bit of work around this to see what we can explore and how we can make this, how we can improve this situation. And Ian being Ian was, yeah, absolutely fine. You go away and do it. So we had great support, and that's basically one of the anchors of you know, the message that we have when we go out and talk about what we're doing, is that it is about creating a positive environment, and everybody needs support in some way. And I've been supported with my line manager that made it easier for me to support Lena. We were able to do something together and make this a bigger thing. And it's also about, you know, the opportunities of going out and talking to other people and collaborating on ideas, so that we were able to make some of the films, some of the awareness films that we've developed. We were just able to run with it and think, how do we, I think when we started thinking about this originally, we have the idea that, you know, what we can do is think about the environment that people come into when they join the organization. We were only two people, and we're not in charge of any recruitment. So it's not about, you know, how we go out and find talent and bring it in. But what we can do is make sure that when people do join the organization, or people that are already here, we can, you know, raise awareness. We can start that conversation to address some of the stigma in the workplace. And we can create that positive environment that enables people to come in and to thrive and to pursue a career. And we kind of explain this to people as, you know, we want to get our house in order before we invite people to tea, which is probably, you know, the best way of thinking about it.
Yeah, And I mean, I've benefited from some of the work that you've done. I mean, I've seen a presentation that you did internally, Sean, to a community within the BBC. And I think there's some really good materials that you've just openly shared with the world, which is really powerful, because not only are you taking, you know, the BBC on a journey and the employees within the BBC and your colleagues, but actually you're allowing other people to tap into that content. So just tell me a little bit more about how this content was created, because, you know, there's some level of expertise that's gone into creating those videos, right? Those experiences that you've done. And for those who don't know, you know, this is it's being able to be have the perspective of somebody who's autistic, right? Yes. Within a work context.
Yes, so you're talking about we've made a couple of films. There's a 360 virtual reality film, an immersive experience where you can sort of see the working world from a neurodivergent individual's perspective. A lot of it firstly involved talking to people with different neurodivergent conditions and getting their stories, and the fact that we learned a lot of the traits are shared between the different conditions, whether it's autism, dyslexia, ADHD, dyspraxia. We highlighted that some of the traits are shared, and in terms of like how people communicate, how people have sensory issues in terms of their environment, and also I guess the challenges that come with having, you know, a condition which is on the neurodivergent spectrum. But in terms of like how did we make it, we worked with a producer, and we gathered information, the stories, and also I explained to him how we wanted it to be from the individual's perspective, because a lot of the content out there is very much documentary style, or it's like talking heads interview, which a lot of people who are on the ND spectrum may feel not so comfortable with, like a camera pointing at them and then someone firing questions at you saying, well, how does this make you feel, and you know, how do you process information, and what are the challenges you're feeling? It can be quite invasive. So we wanted to create, and I know I find that invasive, so I thought, well, why not create a film where you get to see it from the person's perspective, almost like put this lens on, and you get to experience how they feel and about their environment, rather than just sort of watching someone trying to explain with great difficulty about what their world is like. So that's how we kind of came to that, you know, point, because a lot of the stuff out there is about it is sort of let's have a camera follow somebody around or ask them lots of questions, and it doesn't really get you can't really get what their world is about in that way.
I think, you know, from when we were talking about doing this at the beginning, Lena, you were very clear that you know, so the way that we did this and the way that we approached this had to be, you know, we would use the different perspectives of the neurodiverse lens, basically. So rather than follow the traditional diversity and inclusion way of doing things, as you said, we wanted this to be a creative initiative. We wanted to think about how do we employ storytelling. We are a creative organization at heart, so let's use some of those skills and some of those abilities. Let's use the different lens of neurodiversity to look at things differently and come up with more engaging methods that we can help tell our story across the organization. And I think it's kind of that original kind of vision that Lena had at the beginning for this to not be, let's not go down that traditional route, because, you know, we don't feel it's necessarily applicable when we're talking about neurodiversity.
Yeah,
you know, we wanted to give it a different perspective.
it's more human as well, because we're dealing with human beings at the end of the day. And the last thing you want is to become part of some kind of training video where it's like you're almost having to bare your soul, and then that gets sort of utilized as a training tool. So we wanted to create content where it felt like it's more human and it's sharing an experience. You're truly sharing an experience with someone, and you don't feel like, you know, it's not sort of, I guess it's not impinging on your privacy. And yeah, it's a much more inclusive way of sharing information and stories, I guess. And that's what I found doing that, because in that way it's more about empathy rather than sympathy, if you see what I mean.
Yes, it's interesting because I've shared some of those videos at NICE, where I work, as part of my communications around neurodiversity across the organisation. And I had somebody come back to me who went, wow, that video just got me. As in, they felt the video showed how they feel in a really good way. So for them, that was positive and empowering, because they thought, oh, well, here's a video where I could show other people to say, you know, sometimes this is how I'm affected. And this video is a good description of, so it's not just helping people understand, but actually what you're doing is you're empowering some individuals who may not feel they're able to communicate how they're feeling within that environment. So they can say, well, hey, look at this, to their manager or to a colleague that worked with them. This is sometimes how I feel. And I think that is incredible work. And clearly, because this person decided to come and make the point of telling me that.
It's fantastic to hear. I want to add to that. For me, if you were to ask me, what is it actually like? It's really difficult. If you're ND and someone says, what's it like, really? It's hard to explain the challenges. And it's like, because you live it. For some people, it can be quite challenging to just talk about it in the first place. Also, there's a lot of stigma. People are afraid that they will get treated differently if they reveal that they have these sorts of challenges. So you sort of hold back. So this, you know, the content that we have, it's to enable it's to give people a voice. And it's fantastic that you've shared this, because that's what we want, is the fact that if you can't express yourself, then hopefully this will be a great way to share and express what you're feeling, and the whole thing about empowering. So this is why it's like, for me, what we're trying to do with the work in neurodiversity is you can only get the full benefit of a person's potential if that person is empowered to participate without being forced to suppress their differences.
Absolutely. At an event recently in the Czech Republic, and I asked hundreds of people in the audience, do they know what neurodiversity is? And only two of them put their hand up. And I did a study with Tapin, graduates across the UK, thousands of them, and only 1% of them who are not neurodiverse knew what neurodiversity is. We're nowhere near where we need to be. There's clearly some movement, but I think that's why this is so important. Where you're opening up the doors to what you're trying to do, and all the other things you're trying to achieve, Lena, you know, I think it's brilliant. And it just allows people to access this information in a really different way, but actually that's relevant to the BBC, the organisation that you work within. How is the BBC generally, your colleagues, people within other teams, how has it been picked up there? Have you found that more people have been willing to come forward, put their hand up, ask questions?
I would say since when we first started on BBC Cape, probably four years ago or so, we knew maybe a couple of individuals, you know, within the organisation who were openly ND and spoke about it, but not really much more than that. And I don't want to put this all down to the fact that, you know, we've started Cape, but we have noticed, you know, probably in the last 18 months, 24 months, that there is a change, and I think that's part of the external conversation around neurodiversity and the fact that an awful lot more people, certainly on social media, are are starting to talk about it and open that conversation. But I would say, yeah, we've definitely we're much more aware now of many more people that are identifying as ND, which is brilliant in terms of taking forward the conversation within the organization. And you know, it does help us kind of project and share some of the messages and some of the content that we're doing within the BBC. You know, and being able to you know, some of the stuff that's out there, helping people, you know, have those conversations with their line managers so that they can find that support that they need.
Also, we're really proud that we're able to introduce like the term neurodiversity at the BBC, and the fact that it's good now that we've got it in our statement of intent for diversity. Basically, what it means is that neurodiversity as a term is now acknowledged alongside the other categories within diversity, such as LGBT, disability, BAME, gender, etc. So it's just sort of accepted in its own right, because we're well aware of the fact that there are people who may identify as neurodivergent but may not want to sort of accept the fact that they have a disability. So we want to give people a choice. There are people who are neurodivergent that will also say, well, they identify with the disability category, but we wanted to give people a choice, and the fact that all orientations are, you know, everyone's sort of, you know, welcome. And especially it helps when we've got this in our statement of intent for people joining the BBC, and also making people who are already identifying as ND but haven't necessarily disclosed, that they will feel comfortable maybe later on to disclose or share that they are, basically. So we're working hard on creating an environment and changing the culture where it's almost becomes the norm, and it's acceptable to say I'm dyslexic or I'm autistic, you know what I mean?
Well, it's the fear of, one, how it's going to be perceived, and two, lots of people that I talk to feel they don't want to be a burden necessarily, which is wrong, but you know, they don't want to be the person to put their hand up and say, oh, well, you know, these are some of the challenges I'm facing. Some reasonable adjustments could help me, because there's still some stigma around that, and people fear what that then means, how their colleagues perceive them, which again is wrong. And I think by taking the approach that you've taken and from coming within the organisation, you know, this has not necessarily been an initiative that's been driven. I'm not necessarily saying it's a bad thing if it is driven by the top of the organisation or by diversity or HR. It's just wonderful to see it just kind of organically happening within the organisation and then growing from there. And I certainly think a lot of organisations and people can take a lot from that, just to empower your people to stand up and be who they are, which is just so important.
Yeah, I think the fact that, you know, we haven't done this through a traditional diversity route has definitely helped kind of mold and shape some of the things that we've focused on, you know, the messages and the narrative that we've been able to deliver. You know, I think it helps that we are a neurodiverse team ourselves, and we bring our own individual skills, you know, into this initiative, and it makes it bigger and better than it could otherwise be. And that's also part of the message that we're trying to share with people.
It's brilliant. It really is brilliant. And I guess just finally, what would be your advice? You know, if you could give some tips and advice to organisations or to even individuals or to managers, what would you say to them? What would be your tips and hints?
I'd start with giving people choices, especially if it's an open plan office. So giving them access to quieter, more private working spaces.
I think, it's about having a conversation with people. I mean, from my personal experience, you know, everything I've learned and understood has come from a conversation with Lena. And it's about being open, you know, and actively listening to that individual and not writing off or trying to second guess what it is that they need. You know, accept that you know, if they're telling you this is how I prefer to work, or these are the adjustments that I think would help me, accept that, help them to achieve those adjustments and that support, and then have ongoing conversations around how those things operate and work going forward. I'd say the biggest takeaway is that, you know, if we can make these accommodations, if we can think about things from a neurodiverse perspective in terms of that, you know, the way that we work and how we work and how we communicate with each other, it doesn't just benefit, you know, the ND community. Everybody wins. It's kind of thinking about, you know, the different way that we all work. The easiest way of explaining it is some of us prefer to work in a very quiet environment if we've got something to concentrate on. Others of us prefer a noisier environment or some activity going on in the background. And it's that, you know, those different elements and choices that we all recognize. It's just that for a certain part of the workforce, having a quiet office is essential to getting anything done, or having that kind of busy activity is essential. So if we can give those options to people, everybody ends up winning, basically. And I'd say, you know, probably one of the biggest achievements that we've had is that we've taken those principles and we've worked with our internal, the BBC workplace teams that manage our estate, and external designers and accessibility consultants. And we've taken this concept of neurodiversity, working in one of the tools that we've produced, our new Wales office. We've got a new BBC Wales HQ based in Cardiff, and they've taken you know, some of the work that we've done through neurodiversity and the conversations we've had with them to consider cognitive accessibility within that building, and you know, we think that's a huge step in that direction. And we're really pleased that they've been able to do it. The guys that took it on embraced it, really listened to us. I think they've been able to do wonderful things in that building, thinking about well-being spaces, thinking about color schemes and the impact of patterns and textures, you know, thinking about lighting, you know, all of these things they've been able to incorporate in that building. To, you know, just as I'm not saying they've answered all the questions, but it's a huge step in the right direction.
For me, it's like, to fellow neurodivergent people, is sort of learn as much as you can about how your mind works, and in order to sort of, you know, work around and design the way you want to work, you know, and communicate effectively. Because too much of the time we try and force ourselves, you know, that sort of square peg round hole scenario, and force ourselves to work to a template, when it's much better to figure out how your brain works so that you can work at your best, and understand that just because your mind works differently, it doesn't mean it's less or not capable. All it means is you just need to do things a little bit differently and things will work out for you. It's just being comfortable with yourself to do that, and being confident enough to let, say, an employer know that this is how I like to communicate, this is how I like to work, and then sort of negotiating and figuring out between you what's the best way. And as a result, it's kind of a win-win situation, both for the employee and both for, you know, for the employer and the employee.
You know, if you allow the individual the space to be themselves, you get some amazing output and some incredibly different perspective. There's a lot of value out of it.
Brilliant. And I think that's a good place where we can bring it to a close. I think, you know, individuals within organisations, if they understand themselves better, they can ensure that they're performing at their optimum. And from the organisation's perspective, they get really engaged, committed employees who can do some incredible work. So I think it's really worth putting the effort in, you know, making the changes and supporting our workforce to be able to bring themselves to work, right, and be their best selves. Where can people find the information? Because, you know, I found it on YouTube, being able to watch some of those videos. What would be your advice if they want to go and learn some more about the work you've been doing? Because it's quite a bit out there.
Yeah, we've got a couple of things. There's the films that Lena was talking about at the beginning are available on YouTube. We are on Twitter. You can follow what we're doing at BBC Cape, all one word. And is there anything? We are in the process. We do realise that, you know, we're in the process of building a website that we can put some more of our content on. So it's all in one place at the moment. So it will be all in one place going forward. We're hoping to have something ready for that probably early in the new year.
Excellent. And there's some other articles that I've read that can be found on the internet as well. So if you search, if you put your names in, they'll be able to find some content, some blogs, and I've seen some other articles. I think there's a lot of content out there that you've been sharing, which is fantastic. So listen, I really love what you're both doing, and it's incredible. I think it really does make a difference for people, clearly. And I'm so privileged and pleased to have had you on today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Theo.
Thanks for having us.
It's been a privilege to talk to you.
You've been listening to Neurodiversity at Work, available on all good podcast hosts. Please do sign up now, like, share, and comment. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you.